Today, we're going to be in Genesis 6 and 7. And this is going to discuss the way the flood begins. And the flood in Genesis 6 and 7 is about global judgment. Global judgment. Not judgment just in one place. So this week, we're going to close one book of history, and we're going to open another book of history. And the book of history we're closing is the history of Adam, and the book we're going to open is the history of Noah. And that begins in chapter 6, verse 9. And we're going to pick it up, however. We're going to close our book of Adam in Genesis 5:32. Noah was 500 years old, and Noah became the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now this, again, brings us to the end of the story of Adam, and Moses is going to give us a little bit more information in 6, 1 through 8, because he wants to show us how bad things have gotten since the murderous Lamech, remember that, son of Cain? So we'll pick it up in chapter 6. We'll look at the first four verses here. It came about when man began to multiply on the face of the earth, the daughters were born to them. And the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves, whomever they chose. Then the Lord said, "My spirit shall not strive with man forever, because he is flesh. Nevertheless, his days shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown." And, of course, that last little phrase is talking about the Nephilim that he talks about at the beginning of verse 4. Moses is giving the first major reason for the coming flood. And what he focuses on are the actions of the sons of God. And the sons of God took daughters of men for themselves. Now, we have no problem understanding who or what the daughters of men are. They are human children. That's pretty clear. But who are the sons of God? There is the problem. That's not so obvious. But Moses is trying to point out that because of the sins of the sons of God, God says this in verse 3. He says, "My spirit shall not strive with man forever." So God is essentially saying, because of what I see, man has 120 years left. Now, after the Lord's statement that he's giving up on man, Moses goes back in verse 4, and what he does in verse 4 is kind of fills in what he started in verses 1 and 2. And we'll go back and look at verse 4 again. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days. Afterwards, when the sons of God came into them, the daughters of men, who bore children to them. Now, that's bearing children to the sons of God. And they're somehow associated with these Nephilim. And the Nephilim were the mighty men who were of old and men of renown. Now, they have children, and these children are what Moses calls Nephilim. Now, Nephilim doesn't mean giants. It kind of came to mean that because of the terms men of renown and mighty men, you know, like J.P. Morgan was a giant in his industry. It doesn't mean he was taller than everybody else, though he was. He was a tall man. But he wasn't unusually tall. Nephilim, really, in Hebrew, is from Nephal, which means the fallen ones. Those who have fallen so far that they are out of God's favor. They've fallen into God's judgment. And they are the ones who are rapidly spreading this wickedness on the earth. Now, like everyone throughout all of history, since this was first written down, we want to know, but who are the sons of God? And basically, there's three basic views of this. Number one, they're fallen angels, that they're actually demons. They're the angels who followed Satan and became demonic. They began to dwell and live upon the earth, just as Satan was cast to live upon the earth by God. They're also, second view, they're simply the sons of Seth. They're that line we saw come out of chapter 5. Seth replaces Abel, and Seth is going to carry on a godly line, or the holy line. And the thirdly, they're powerful men indwelled by demons. Now, one of the men I highly, highly respect is Erwin Lutzer. Not to be confused with Lucifer, but Erwin Lutzer. I'm going to simply read what he writes in his book, Serpent of Paradise, Erwin Lutzer. This gives tremendous background on the life and career of the serpent whom Satan indwelled. But listen to this. Sons of God, a description of powerful rulers who were controlled or indwelt by fallen angels. These evil angels left their first abode, which is what Jude says in his book, and inhabited bodies of human warriors, the mighty ones of the earth. These mighty men were ordinary human beings given superhuman strength because they were demonically controlled. They married as many women as they wished. And the children of these marriages were not God kings, but men of flesh and blood who all died in the flood. So all of these children that are talked about here are all died in the flood. A flood would destroy all the inhabitants of the world, and the serpent's hope revived. If all of mankind was drowned, the seed of the woman would be obliterated. What the serpent couldn't do, God was going to do himself. Now, who's the seed that the serpent was afraid of? The one promised to Eve, remember, in Genesis 3:15. He's trying to destroy this human race because God promised there's going to come a seed from her that's going to crush your head. There's nothing he wants more than to see this race destroyed. So now, of these three views, whichever of these views is right, they all indicate a rapid and irreversible degradation of the human race. And it's so degraded that the Lord says, I'm giving up on it. I will not contend, I will not judge, I will not try to correct man any longer. And I think this is the best explanation for what's going on. Demonically controlled men. Now don't miss the point that Satan is trying to corrupt man. Again, he's trying to corrupt man so that God can't keep his promise. Satan doesn't want to be destroyed. Now look at 6:5-7. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. How bad off was man? Only evil continually. Then the Lord said, kind of reiterating what he said above, I will blot man out, whom I've created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them. I'm sorry that I have made them. Now here's the second major reason for the flood. God was sorry that he had made man. He's grieved over the state of his creation. He didn't create man to be this way. And the race has become so evil that man does not want God. Man would rather serve the demons, just like Eve did from the very beginning. This has been the course of the human race. Where are the people who call upon him? Where are the ones who walk with him, like Enoch? And it seems to be there's no one walking with the Lord. There's no one calling upon the Lord, as we saw in chapter 5. Satan seems to be winning, but he isn't, because God has a plan. And God is a God of grace. Look at 6:8. Very simple, short verse. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Now, favor is the Hebrew word for grace. And that's the first time the word grace is used in the Bible. It's a first. Remember, Genesis is the book of beginnings, the where things started. This is where the whole concept of grace begins. We've seen many examples of God's grace before this. He's gracious toward Adam. He's gracious toward Eve. He's gracious toward Cain. He preserves his life. But Noah is our greatest example now from this point on in the Bible. Now, there are going to come others later, but this is the one we have right now. Now, Noah is righteous like Abel, and he walks with God like Enoch, because that's how they were both described. And Enoch walked with God and preached judgment. We saw that last week in the book of Jude. But we find out in 2 Peter 2:2 that Noah also preached judgment. 2 Peter 2:2, God did not spare angels when they sinned, but sent them to hell, to Tartarus. These are the angels that indwelt these mighty rulers, putting them in gloomy dungeons. The angels that did this before the flood remained in this place, and they're still there until God is going to throw them into the lake of fire at the end of time. Now, notice God did not spare the ancient world when he brought the flood on its ungodly people, but protected Noah. Why? Because Noah found favor. Noah was bestowed grace by God, and Noah is a preacher of righteousness. So while Noah is building the ark, he is preaching the same way that Noah did. Now, while Noah was building the ark, he actually condemned the world with his action of building the ark and his preaching. Hebrews 11 says that. Hebrews 11:7. By faith, Noah, when warned about the things not yet seen, there's never been a flood. He had no concept of what that was. But he believed God, and in holy fear, notice that fear of the Lord. See, Noah was a wise man. He feared the Lord. He believed what the Lord said, and he said, this guy's serious. He built the ark. By his faith, he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness that comes by faith. So his building the ark was a condemnation to those around him because they didn't listen to God the way he did. So Enoch was taken. Remember, he didn't die. Noah is going to be rescued. he's going to die in the new world. But you know what? Both of these men are alive today, and they're with the Lord in glory today, and they're waiting, just like we are, for their resurrection bodies, which they don't have yet. Bodies fit for glory. But they're in heaven in glory right now. Now look at the corruption and the violence that filled the earth. Let's go to 6:9 and read the genealogy, because this begins the new book. These are the records of the generation of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. Notice that, like Enoch. And Noah became the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. So this corruption of inward sin in man led to acts of violence. Now, because Moses says all flesh here, notice how it says all flesh a couple of times. John Whitcomb makes a good point on this when he says that even the animals became violent, because you'll see that all flesh means all breathing things are going to be obliterated. They're all violent. So all living things were affected by this violence, this violent nature that seemed to come out. And animals didn't eat man, and they didn't eat each other, but they could kill man and they could kill each other. And you think of especially the very large dinosaurs that would have been alive at this time, how dangerous they would be just on the basis of their sheer size. And if they became violent, well, how dangerous that would be. So you can imagine the earth just slipping into a violent chaos. And God says, I'm going to end it all. And now he comes to Noah and he says, now I'm going to give you some instructions, because there's going to be a problem and I want to give you the solution. So look what he says in 13. God says to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. And behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. I'm going to destroy everything along with the earth. Verse 14, make for yourself an ark of gopher wood, and you shall make the ark with rooms and cover it inside and out with pitch. So God is saying here, I'm going to destroy everything that breathes. So Noah, you build an ark. I am bringing the flood of water upon the earth. That's why you have to have an ark. That's why you have to have a boat. But, verse 18, now this is where it really gets important. This is why he tells him to build the ark. I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. That's eight people. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, the animals after their kind, creeping things after their kind, two of every kind shall come to you. They shall come to you, and you shall keep them alive. As for you, take for yourself some of all the food which is edible. Gather it up for yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them. Thus Noah did. God's promise here is, Noah, I'm going to keep you alive. So that's why you have to build an ark. I'm going to keep you and a fresh set of animals alive. Now, the Lord made a covenant promise to Noah and his entire family. This is an absolute guarantee here. And it's another first in the book of Genesis. First use of the word covenant. And what's a covenant? A covenant is a contract promise that the Lord makes with man. And in this case, specifically Noah and his family. A contract promise that he makes. And he makes it totally on the basis of his word. And it's a promise that has no one else to back it up. Doesn't need anybody else to back it up, because it's God. He says, I'm going to keep you, your family, and two of every kind of breathing animal alive. Now, when Noah hears this promise, look what he does in 22. Built the ark, gathered all the food, and had space and room to bring the animals into the ark. According to all that God commanded him, so he did. He did this because he had faith in the Lord. Holy fear of the Lord. By faith, he built the ark. And in doing that, he condemned the world. So when the ark was complete, the Lord says to him, come to the ark in 7:1. And before we get to that, I want to say the word come here in this verse is, this is another first word. This is the use of the word come is the first time this is used in the Bible. And God calls out, say, come. And it's the Lord's invitation to man to escape coming judgment. Now, I think here that this come to the ark, anyone who heard this could come. But the promise, the guaranteed promise, is to whom? To Noah and his family. But that doesn't exclude anyone from hearing. The only thing that excludes anyone else from hearing is their refusal to hear it. That's hard to reconcile, but that is true. Now look at 7:1-5. The Lord said to Noah, and mine says, enter the ark. Literally, it's come to the ark in Hebrew. Come to the ark, you and all your household. For you alone I have seen to be righteous before me in this time. And now, why are they righteous? Because God is gracious. They are not righteous on their own merit. They're righteous on the basis of His grace toward them. Verse 2, you shall take with you every clean animal by sevens. Now notice, this is different. Before it was two. Now it's by sevens. And you're going to see the number seven keep coming up. A male and his female. And of the animals that are not clean, you're going to simply take two, a male and female. Of the birds of the sky, by sevens, male and female, to keep offspring alive on the face of the earth. And after seven more days, I will send rain on the earth for 40 days and for 40 nights. And I will blot out from the face of the land every living thing that I have made. And so Noah did according to all that the Lord had commanded him. Said it again. This is, if you will, the seven-day warning. God's saying, it's been 120 years since you started this project. It's going to come to an end. You got 7 days left. Next, after having said that, giving this warning, Moses gives the exact year of the flood, 7-6. Now, Noah was 600 years old when the flood of water came upon the earth. Now, this is the year that Methuselah dies. Now, what's Methuselah? What's his name mean? Remember what his name means? When it comes, he dies. Point is, that's the year the judgment's going to start. And when the judgment comes, when it comes, when the judgment comes, and the judgment is the flood. And it's coming. So all aboard. This is it. 7-10. Everybody on. And then Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him entered the ark because of the water of the flood. Of clean animals and animals that are not clean, the birds and everything that creeps on the ground, there went into the ark to Noah by twos, male and female, as God had commanded Noah. And it came about after 7 days that the water of the flood came upon the earth. Notice that it says there that the animals went into the ark. It's going to become a little clearer in a few verses, but they went into the ark. This is the animals responding to the Lord's call and the Lord's call to come. And perhaps the Lord chooses specific animals that are not affected by violence, maybe very young animals, to come two by two. And Noah takes them and allows them onto the ark as they come to him, just as the Lord had commanded. See, you can't imagine Noah having to go out and chase these animals around and gather them. You begin to understand here that they're responding to the call of God. Now Moses gets more specific. He's told us the year that the flood is going to come. Now he's going to tell us the very day that the flood started. 7:11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month of that year, on the 17th day of that month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened. We're going to go on. And the rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. And on the very same day, Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and the sons of Noah, and Noah's wife, and his three wives with his sons with them, they entered the ark. They and every beast after its kind, and all the cattle. They went into the ark to Noah. They went into the ark to Noah by twos of all flesh, in which was the breath of life. And those that entered, male and female, of all flesh, entered as God had commanded him. And the Lord closed it behind him. Closed what? Closed the door. The call ended, and the door closed. The Lord closed the door. As hinted above, look at verse 16. They entered, male and female of all flesh, they entered as God had commanded him. The Lord closed the door. Noah did not shut anyone out. That's important to see. Noah is not the one who shut anyone out. The Lord did. The Lord made the call after making the promise. Everyone and every animal who hears him responded. And the Lord did the choosing, both of the animals and of the eight who were on that ark, and closed the door. But I want you to notice a couple of things. Like in 7:11, notice where the water came from. The water came from below. The fountains of the great deep burst open, pumping up from the bottom of the ocean sea floors. Because remember, God had created seas and land. So that's the release of great underground sources. But what about the water from above? It says in verse 11, it also said the floodgates, or the waters of the heavens, literally, fell from the sky. There's a collapse of the waters above. Now, if you remember, when we looked at Genesis chapter 2, it said that the earth was watered by mist covering the ground. So this is talking about before the flood. The earth was probably covered with this vast water canopy that was above the atmosphere, and moisture was simply kind of a cloud fog, if you will, that would come and go and give moisture to the grounds. Now, there was really no weather as we think of it, because in order to have rain, you have to have wind. It's a necessity. And in order to have wind, to have a rainfall cycle, you have to have a variance in temperature. Because without temperature variation, there's no wind. So under this greenhouse blanket effect, if you will, of water vapor that was surrounding the earth, the temperatures around the world were equal and constant. No wind, no rain. That's why this idea of it's going to rain and there's going to be a flood, to Noah would have just been incomprehensible. I don't understand what you mean, but I'll believe what you say. Because whatever you're saying, if it's killing everything, it must be bad. So just think of this, a constant temperature like San Diego around the world, a perfect 72 all the time, or 7:17 through 24. It gives a description of what this water did. Then the flood came upon the earth for 40 days, and the water increased and lifted up the ark so that it rose above the earth. I want to also point out that the creation scientists have looked at the amount of water vapor in the air now in our atmosphere. And if all the water vapor in the atmosphere would fall out of the sky now, the way our weather is and the way our environment is today, it would cover the earth with 2 to 3 inches of water. So this rain fell for 40 days and 40 nights. And the water prevailed and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the surface of the water. And the water prevailed more and more on the earth so that all the high mountains everywhere under the heavens were covered. And water prevailed 18 feet, or 15 cubits, depending on what your translation says. 15 cubits, 18 to 20 feet, and the mountains were covered. Now, this is over the whole earth. And all flesh that moved on the earth perished, birds, cattle, beasts, swarming things, all mankind, everybody dies. All that was on the dry land and all those whose nostrils was the breath of life, anything that breathed with lungs, died. Verse 22. Notice verse 22, it's like chapter 5, isn't it? And they died, and they died, and they died, and they died. This is a repeat of that. They died. But, you know, everything that breathes air dies. What about the fish? There you go. What about the fish and the sharks and all the monsters in the sea? They're left alive because they are the scavengers that do the cleanup. They ate everything. That's why there's no fossil remnants in the oceans, because they scavenged everything. And even if a ship sinks today, anything that's flesh or blood is gone, or anything edible. They know this from one great ship that was declared to be unsinkable. A man said, not even God could sink this ship on the night before it sailed. What ship is that?
Titanic.
You know, when they found that ship, there was not one trace of human life. You know why? Scavenged by the fish. They eat everything. Now, this is called the Great Mabul. This is the flood of Noah's age. The Hebrew word is Mabul. This is the only flood or storm in the Bible that's called the Mabul. It's unique to these chapters. It's unique in all the history of mankind. And the only people rescued are Noah and his family in a giant ship called the Ark. What we're going to do next week is Genesis 8 and 9. We're going to see how the flood recedes and how Noah and his family entered a new world. After the flood is the world that we live in today. Our atmosphere, our geology, the structure of the earth as we know it, is the earth that they entered. Mountains much higher, the strata of the earth changed, oceans much deeper, all of the result of this drastic force of water that inundated the world, the tidal waves that came up out of the oceans, and the earthquakes that would have occurred. The volcanoes that we now know exist probably were a result of this massive pushing of water, a change in the geology and the configuration of the earth. That's the world we live in now. We're going to do chapters 8 and 9. We're going to see the flood recede, and we're going to see the new world of Noah. And if you really don't want to wait, then read ahead. and find God's purpose for what he does in these next two chapters. And by then, by the time we get done, we'll have a whole story of the flood. Yeah.